September 30th, 2015. You are looking live at Syracuse, New York. This is episode 530 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. I told you we were going to have a special midweek podcast this week, and we do. We'll be back next week, by the way, not just with the regular Allison Futter podcast, but also we will be doing short podcast previewing each of the playoff series. I'll also be writing things for each of the playoff series because I get really antsy if I'm not constantly typing something. So, but we're gonna take a little timeout, a little pause. We're still gonna talk about baseball, but I want to, before we get into the craziness of the postseason, I felt like I needed to take a step back and talk to someone whose opinion and thoughts on this I really want to hear, and that's Howard Megdal. He's a writer for Politico New York and USA Today Sports Weekly, several other places. Next year, he has the author of the upcoming book, The Cardinal Way, which of course will just get him, like me, yelled at on Twitter constantly. But I'm delighted to have Howard here. He's written for us at Sports on Earth and is one of my absolute favorite sports reporters and people in the world. So, Howard, thank you for coming on with me.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Will. Always great to chat.
Okay, so I have a couple things. You and I have talked before. I find the narrative of Howard Megdal's baseball experience fascinating because, you know, you and I have talked before about how, you know, you've written about the Mets, you've written about the finances. I think you were really first and I think most consistent writing about some of the financial troubles the Mets have had and how kind of like they've been kind of deceiving about that. You know, in addition to that, you wrote one of my favorite stories of all time, which is you were just the first person to notice, hey, is that an Amway store in the middle of Citi Field? Which is always one of my favorite things. But now, you know, in addition to that, you've been a Mets fan your entire life. And I always joked that like it would be very weird for me to learn that, like, you know, the things that I love suddenly hate me, you know, and we talked about that. Well, now this year, I have not really talked to you since this year's emergence has happened. I'm curious how you feel about that. I'm curious about how you're reacting to it, if you've had time to really let it sink in. First off, what is your take on this crazy season that's happened with the Mets?
I mean, it feels like found money, and I mean that both both literally as it relates to how the Mets were able to make the moves they made, because they wouldn't have been able to add the players who have helped power them to a division title if not for David Wright's insurance money when Wright went on the DL, and Henry Mejia managing incredibly to get suspended twice within the same year for PEDs. So from a fan perspective, even from a front office perspective, the idea was, you know, look, we'll hang around, we'll hope to do the best we can. You know, there's the front office conversations that I've had. And, you know, the Nationals are giving us a chance, but no one in that front office thought the Nationals would totally implode the way they have, in the same way that nobody thought that around baseball. And nobody had any reason to believe that the additions the Mets made, because the Mets had a horrific offense near the bottom of the National League, that the addition that they made could do anything more than make them competent. Instead, the Mets have had essentially the best offense in the National League since the trade deadline. And so you combine those two things, and it makes for a remarkable ride across the board. For me personally, it's just been a pleasure to write something else. I mean, how many conversations we had through the years where I'm saying, my God, I don't want to write another story about how finances are keeping them from doing something basic, but that's the reality of the New York Mets right now. The reality of the New York Mets has actually been baseball for the last 2 months, and it's been glorious.
And it is funny because I think that is an underreported idea that like the fact that they even had the ability to bring in Cespedes and to do some of these things. It's because of the suspensions, because of Wright and so on. I'm curious, take me to a parallel universe. It's a scary place, but take me to a parallel universe where that doesn't happen. And they are, you know, I wrote about this in New York Magazine this week, talking to my friend Jason Fry, who I think we both know. Yes. And, you know, by in mid-July, like 2 weeks before the deadline, he was like, contract this team. Everything is horrible. We have all this opportunity. Because that was the sense for most of the season, is there with this opportunity with these young starters peaking at just this right moment and all coming together, but this unbelievably terrible offense that the team was either unwilling or more likely unable to actually add to. What would have happened to this team and really this fan base and if they had not made this addition and the Nationals still kind of hang on and beat them? Was this a pivot year in the way that the fan base was reacting to the team?
Boy, it sure seems like it. And it's hard to know what the reaction would have been if you had seen a manifestation of a team dying on the vine. But there were all the fig leaves were gone. You know, back in March, you had the Alderson book come out written by Steve Kettman, and even Alderson himself talked about the financial restrictions. So it wasn't – no one was hiding behind anything anymore. It was obvious what had happened. It was obvious what was happening. And so that combination essentially could it have destroyed the fan base for another generation? It's quite possible. Was there any coming back from it? Who's to say? I mean, that's what's fascinating about it. And we'll see the alternate universe now if the Mets make a postseason run, if they don't make a postseason run. There's going to be some moves that have to be made this offseason in order to keep the team contending and on the rise going into 2016. They might now be able to do it with money they bring in from postseason revenue, but no one really knows. It's just a reset that no one had any reason to believe would be coming for ownership. You know, ownership went out there, and Alderson too, to say, look, if you come out to the ballpark, then we'll spend money on the team. And it was one of these ridiculous cart before the horse things that no business could ever put out there and expect to be sustainable. And yet, they went out and won dramatically enough in July into August, you know, from Wilmer Flores on down, that the fans did come back. And attendance in the first 10 home games in August was up 41% over 2014. And they're up, even if they don't draw a single fan this weekend, they're up 13.9% on the year over 2014. So the fans have come out, and they've actually held up their part of this ludicrous bargain. And now we get to find out whether ownership has even the ability to hold up their end.
Is there a sense, eventually, we'll see what happens in the playoffs, but I have to say, and I'm excited about the Mets, and they're a thrilling team to watch, and there's tons of likable players, and Cespedes has become like this folk hero, you know, all of this really fun stuff. There's still a little part of me that's like, man, they totally got away with this shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true, and it's something I just try to put out of my mind, because there's enjoyable baseball to be had. And the truth of the matter is, there's a window here that, you know, a team properly funded probably would have been able to exploit starting last year and for many years in the future. And what we don't know is, will this be it? Is this the one window? Now that guys will start to get more expensive, now that Cespedes will cost a ton of money. You know, Daniel Murphy's been a huge part of this team. Nobody believes he'll come back next year, and that leaves you with either Dilson Herrera or Wilmer Flores at second base. Who both of them could be a step down from what you've gotten out of Murphy. So exactly what this means for the Mets going forward is hard to say. I prefer to think of it as, all right, there was no reason to think even 2015 would happen the way it did. And so rather than it being this like bleak landscape, past, present, and future, at least there was this period of found enjoyment in the middle of it. And sort of take that as it comes, and we'll look at November when it's November.
There is a general sort of histrionics, we'll say, when it comes to Mets fandom, to the point of, you know, you saw this with the Matt Harvey thing most notably. But, you know, it's funny to take a step back from it. Everyone freaked out about the Harvey thing. Like, this, look, it's all falling apart. We knew it. We knew this Mets thing was going to fall apart. And now it appears to have been resolved almost quietly.
Yes. I mean, it's fascinating. And I will say I have some concerns about the quiet way it's been resolved, because the quiet way it's been resolved is, despite the best advice and evidence that Matt Harvey was presented, with overwhelming public pressure from the team in a way that Steven Strasburg never faced, because the Nationals were on board with trying to preserve his future. That was not the way the Mets played it. And he's now throwing pitches that, again, we don't know definitively are going to ruin his career or not ruin his career. We don't know where the line is. But you know, it just goes back to, there was this idea, oh, well, Scott Boras is creating a problem for the sake of creating a problem, which never made any sense. In other words, there was no logic to the idea that Matt Harvey and Scott Boras would have made this up absent the advice from Dr. James Andrews. It wouldn't have been in Harvey's benefit. It's not in Boras's benefit in terms of what his long-term contract status would be down the line. So clearly this came from somewhere. And the fact that where that came from is now being pushed aside for the sake of the postseason. It's very good for the Mets in 2015. Whether it's good for Harvey long-term, and for the Mets, who, by the way, have 3 years of team control of Harvey left, that remains to be seen. But it does have me a little bit nervous. I don't think we fully know how this shakes out in terms of the long-term risk.
But of course, it feels like everything with the Mets, we don't really know how it's going to turn out in the long term. So,
well, we don't know. We don't know from any team, right? Who can predict the future?
Right. 3 years. Yeah, 3 years ago. Who knows? Like, it was funny. I was actually talking with Jason about this. That if it turned out that the Cardinals, and then this kind of transitioned us into a little bit of a Cardinals thing.
Mm-hmm.
If the Cardinals, because, you know, when I was at Deadspin, he and I famously to me, I don't think it's like there's an oral history of it coming up or anything.
It's not like a Gore Vidal, William F. Buckley.
Yeah, exactly. Not yet.
Right.
But in 2006, we did a long back and forth discussion on the day before Game 7 of the Cardinals Mets in LCS. And one of the funny things that we talked about was the one thing that we weren't sure who was going to win. We weren't sure how it was going to lay out. But the one thing we knew is that this was the end of the line for the Cardinals, and the Mets were building something fantastic for the years to come.
Right.
We're absolutely certain of that. And obviously it did not turn out that way. And one of the things that I've enjoyed, you know, you've been working – so you've got the book, The Cardinals Way, mm-hmm. which is – and you've done countless interviews for it, and this has been from within, you know, kind of about the construction of the team, and we can get into that. But like, to me, one of the things I find fascinating, and you and I talked about this in 2013 when we were at the World Series, and I've always talked to Jason about this too, is being a Mets fan, it's so like constantly being beaten on, and such confusion and disorganization in the front office, that I found it fascinating for you to come to St. Louis and you were just like, the cab drivers know who the backup third baseman is on this team, and you know, they, and everyone seems to like be efficient and not doom and gloom about everything. I'm curious about the transition as a lifelong Mets fan, what in the process of reporting the book, like the difference between that you kind of noticed between not only like the organizations, but just the general vibe about everything.
Well, in terms of within, right, there was an inherent logic to how everything was done. There was a balancing between short and long-term thinking. It comes back to when I see some Cardinals fans on Twitter panicking or worrying or wondering.
Which I have been known to do. That's no question.
Fair enough. But I mean, even present company aside, I mean just in general, sort of a questioning of how the Cardinals operate. It's so hard for me to sort of reconcile that in comparison with spending so much time inside there and seeing the way the Cardinals operate on a day-to-day basis to just kind of want to respond. Not that this is reasonable.
I get it.
These questions made sense, but to just kind of say, you know, no, Mo and Bill have this. Like, it's okay. It's all good. They've thought it through. They've looked at it from every angle. And so, you know, it's the right, if not the obligation of a fan to be thinking of these things. And the reality is that for all the complaints you will sometimes hear from various sports teams and management and things about the fan base, you want fans engaged and you want fans thinking this through with you because that drives revenue. But at the same time, you know, if I'm a Cardinals fan, I'm less worried about the past, present, and future than virtually any person involved with any institution imaginable.
So the opposite of the Mets is what you're saying.
Basically. Yeah, right. Because in this situation, I mean, even the 2015 Mets, essentially how they came to succeed was the same LOL Mets stuff that happens all the time happened again. It just redounded to their benefit, right? Like, their most expensive player has this, like, heretofore unknown career crippling injury, right? And that's how it happens with the Mets. That's Jason Bay all over again, you know, except it's David Wright, so it's much worse. Except in this case, the injury happened just long enough to provide money to have reinforcements, and then David Wright comes back and he's David Wright. I mean, it's the exact opposite of the way it normally works. With the Mets, Henry Mejia gets suspended. He was going to be their closer at the start of the year. Then he gets suspended again, which is sort of mind-boggling to consider. You know, taking the drugs that he was already suspended for while he was being suspended. I mean, as LOL Mets as it gets, it's, you know, the PED equivalent of K-Rod punching his father-in-law. Except it turns out that money was the difference that allows them to go get Cespedes, who performs at near MVP levels for the next 2 months. It was everything Mets turned inside out. That's not how it works with the Cardinals. With the Cardinals, who won 99 games this year, even though, I mean, the best comparison to the 2015 Cardinals has to be Montgomery Burns' Simpsons team in, you know, when Homer at the bat. Uh-huh. I mean, and I mean that in every way. I don't just mean because of all of the, you know, the eight separate tragedies, but the fact that they went to the city championship anyway. You know, that's exactly what the Cardinals are doing here. And yet, it's coming from design. It's coming out of this, like, deep, ludicrously talented team that has all these people who can show up. And, you know, Stephen Piscotty and, you know, right on down the line. And even when Piscotty gets hurt, John Jay, in like a way that had to shock nobody, comes out and gets a big hit in a game that essentially clinches the division title. I mean, you were, what, negative 100% shocked that John Jay was called on in a key situation and came through?
And hit like one of his signature 85 hop doubles.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I guess this actually explains a lot that, like, basically the Cardinals have just lost people to the Springfield mystery spot.
Exactly right.
Here, which actually does make a lot of sense. But and you know that's and I you know I can't wait to read the book and we're going to talk when the book comes out. So I don't want to get too much into that because also it hasn't been published yet. You should, you know, embrace the mystery.
But
certainly, you know, I find the contrast of these two franchises irresistible.
Yeah,
and particularly from, you know, we've talked a lot, and I always try to push you for this, and you always, you know, you're a professional person, so I never quite get you all the way on this, but certainly emotionally speaking, as a Mets fan, like this way, this season, because it does feel like at a certain level, in the ways that you have described, this is a almost spectral season. The Mets. This is there's something whimsical and odd about it happening, which frankly is the type of thing that generally happens with the Mets when they succeed.
When they succeed,
they have these kind of magical seasons, which in retrospect, in the way you describe it, you wonder that, like, well, if they were more competent and could take care of their finances better, they wouldn't have to be magical seasons. They'd just be winning ones.
I don't wonder for a second. That's exactly it.
And so, but I'm curious that, like, do you get emotionally, you get more emotionally involved? Is, like, the Mets fans like this high wire act? Do they like this idea when a season like this happens? Because now it's maximized the drama now, particularly when you look at this Dodger series that they're going to be facing, they may be at home for. It raises the stakes a little bit because the Mets have, everything has fallen right for them. So now it feels like they have to do something with it.
You know, I think Mets fans don't have any other way of knowing. So it's really hard to say. Like, you know, Mets fans don't have that experience that I had, you know, embedding with the Cardinals for the period of writing this book to understand, you know, oh, wow, like, so this is what daily competence feels like, right? So there's no sort of means of comparison. What I do think it does is, if you're in New York and you want a team that's going to consistently win and perform on the field, you've already started rooting for the Yankees. You know, you're a Yankees fan, and that's it. And that's, you value different things out of baseball if you're a Yankees fan. If you're a Mets fan, there's an inherent value for, let's say, embracing the uncertainty and enjoying that sort of magical peak that goes along with it. And we can sort of talk about that in a larger sense, that there's something enjoyable about setting expectations low in general and letting them get exceeded and then setting them high and only be disappointed. But when it comes to the Mets themselves and enjoying that, I think it's the only way you could root for a New York team and still plausibly say you're rooting for an underdog, right? I mean, this is the biggest market in America by far. It's a third bigger than even the Los Angeles metropolitan market. So you split that in two, the financial power that goes with that should be enormous, right? So how do you keep from a situation where you could say, oh, I'm rooting for the underdog all you want. Well, no, it's New York money with enormous New York payroll. Well, Bernie Madoff took care of that and turned the Mets into a small market team. So now Mets fans get to embrace the uncertainty and plausibly say they're rooting for an underdog, an underfunded, a small market team in a way that no other New York team can really say that. Even the Knicks, who have been sort of sabotaged by their owner, the Knicks spent as much as just about anyone else around. Even the Brooklyn Nets spent more than anyone else around for a period of, you know, 3 or 4 years when Prokhorov moved them to Brooklyn. Only the Mets have managed to be, since 2008, a small market team in New York. And so there's something to be said for that.
I'm curious, and this is where I get back to being personal with you.
Right.
Having been around this, like obviously the book is a professional thing, and you've got to know some people, and I really want to ask you about the hacking stuff, but I'm going to wait till the book comes out for that. And so, but you've gotten to know a lot of these guys, and sure. But you're also like, would you classify yourself still as a Mets fan?
Yeah. I mean, you have to consider yourself that way. It's a lifetime of experiencing it. And I think we even talked about this back in 2013 about this idea that like a rational person would just pick the Cardinals and be done with it, you know, but there's tradition that goes into it. There's going to Mets games from the time I was old enough to know what baseball was with my father and sitting with him on Saturday night. And I called him, had him come over, had my daughter stay up, and we all watched the Mets clinch together because there's this family history there that goes along with it. So to take pleasure in seeing that and seeing the Mets do well, there's no choice in the matter. There's no rationality to fandom. So absolutely.
So do you, if the Cardinals and Mets were to theoretically play in an LCS,
yes.
Do you, because I love this notion. I love this kind of conflict between, rationality and emotion and passion and all that comes with that. But, this is still like, I'm not, the question of whether you're rooting for the Mets or the Cardinals is less interesting as much as is it more fun as a fan when you have been kicked like that and they win? Because I, as a Cardinal fan, I have to say, in the context of a Cardinal playoff game, I am not the sum of my Cardinal fan experiences. I am not sitting there going, well, it's okay if he doesn't get a hit here because the Cardinals won the World Series in 2011 and I've had this history of success and things have gone well for me. So it's all right. Like, no, I'm losing my mind like everybody else is. This is the old Bill Simmons idea of like the idea of a grace period. It just does not exist. Like right. you win a championship and then you won another one. And that's just the way that it is.
Right.
And you can call that, I don't think that's arrogant. I think that's being a fan. I think right. If you're cheering for your team, you want them to win. So on one hand, I feel that way and that like my fandom of a team in the moment is context free. There's no there. It is. If they win, I'm happy. If they lose, I'm sad. But with the Mets, it does feel like there is something inherent to riding that line of no matter what happens with the Mets, it's going to be huge and dramatic and a massive thing one way or the other. Is it more fun that way or does it matter?
Well, so there are two parts to that. One, and the most direct part of that is I do think it matters. I remember getting caught up in seeing the Red Sox win in 2004. And, was in upstate New York writing columns about it at a paper up there just out of school. And absolutely loving that. Seeing Red Sox fan friends of mine getting to experience it and understanding that, something historic here had happened because people who had suffered through and you do when you're a fan of a losing team, you're suffering through 162 games a year of it. You're suffering through that year after year. So there's an incredible time commitment that comes with being a baseball fan. And when there's the inherent pleasure on the other side of it, I absolutely think it matters in a fundamental way. I think there's a reason why Mets fans were so quick to embrace this team when it started winning in August, and it was because looking for some bright spot on the other side of it. And so, no, I think it's really huge. And I also think, for what it's worth, if they lose to a very good Dodgers team, you know, with a payroll of, you know, a gazillion dollars, I think, I have to look up the specific number, I think it's still a season that provided a few months of, you know, like I said before, found money. The particulars of if there's a Cardinals-Mets NLCS goes back to sort of what has happened professionally to me. And it's been the opposite of what I've heard a lot of colleagues of ours talk about. The idea that, you know, well, now that I'm writing, the story is the only thing, and I don't take pleasure in seeing, you know, individual teams do well. That isn't the case for me. I cover a Knicks game, and I enjoy seeing the Knicks do well as a lifelong Knicks fan. What has happened to me is the hatred that you feel as a fan
for the opponent,
that's disappeared, yeah, right? Yeah, and so, you know, I've had people say to me on Twitter things like, "Oh, I can't wait to root against the Cardinals," and I've had to sort of push back to be like, about that, you know, because it won't give me any pleasure to see the Cardinals lose, this team that beat the Mets in 2006. You know, knowing the guys who put that team together. And getting to know them through writing the book. In the same way that I never looked at the Phillies the same way again after I got to spend some time writing about Jimmy Rollins and talking to Jimmy Rollins and experiencing, you know, who he was as a person. That fundamentally changed the way you look at it. And so it's more that I've lost that ability to hope that bad things happen to opponents rather than losing the inherent ability to enjoy what goes right. And that even happened last night. I was covering a WNBA game and have covered the New York Liberty all year and was excited to see them make a run to the finals, but they ended up losing to the Indiana Fever and Tamika Catchings, who's just this remarkable human being. And so I had a lot of people ask me, you know, how did you feel about that? And I was sad for one, happy for the other. There was no pleasure in seeing anybody lose.
Yeah, I understand that. I have to say, though, that like my father and I have always joked that our favorite team is the Cardinals and our second favorite team is the Cubs not winning the World Series. So, and which is fine because, you know, to me, I understand the excitement the Cubs fans are feeling. They should feel excited. That, like, talk about the idea of appreciating the work that people do. I love that Tumblr site that came out recently where someone pointed out all the dumb things that people said about Theo Epstein like 4 or 5 years ago. The idea, like, what's he doing? We're sick of your grand experiment. We have no patience for this. And, like, right, to see the result of smart people doing smart things is always exciting.
And flies in the face of curses. Can I just ask you, though, like, why? Because I've seen this from a lot of Cardinals fans who are, like, generally gracious. And you and I have both had this discussion with many people on Twitter that I think Cardinals fans, not universally, because that's a ridiculous standard to hold any group of people to, but disproportionately are more gracious. But there's this disdain for the Cubs that you would think, well, you guys have beaten them for 100 years. Why is there this disdain for the Cubs? Even though they always, it's like disdaining the Washington Generals.
Well, I think disdain is the wrong word. Disdain is not quite right. Because, I mean, frankly, even though the Cardinals have defeated the Cubs for such a repeated basis for such a repeated period of time, and I would love to just rattle off all the stats for you right now, but I won't. There is a respect for the Cubs fan base. There is a respect for that organization. Even when they're bad, the Cubs are, like, the Cubs draw, the Cubs do well, the Cubs are an iconic baseball franchise, and they are, you know, and it's also worth knowing where I grew up. Like, I grew up in central Illinois. Like, north of me are Cubs fans, south of me are Cardinals fans, so I'm right at that line. Like, my best friends growing up are all Cubs fans, and all my friends from college are all Cubs fans, so it becomes like, it is a, I've always even thought the Cardinals-Cubs rivalry was a more cordial rivalry than, say, the Yankees-Red Sox one. Like, it's a rivalry, and I don't want the Cubs to win the World Series, but not because I hate the Cubs and want their fans to be miserable. It speaks to, it speaks to this notion of the same way that, like, maybe the Yankees hated the Red Sox, but really, there was something about the notion that you know, the Cubs are so kind of wrapped up in this idea of never quite being able to do it that for me, my famous story on this is I've told the story before, but in 2003, when the Cubs they were up 5-1 or whatever the score was in game 6. And I called my dad and I was living in an apartment with no cable and no air conditioning. It was a difficult time in my life. And, but I called dad and I said, have you seen the score? I'm like, yeah. He's like, are you watching? And he said, and we both said, neither one of us was watching. And we felt like we owed it to the Cubs to go watch, to see right. them go to the World Series. And that's kind of what I mean about it, is that like, I don't like the Cubs. I want them to lose, but not because I think there's a rot at the core of the organization. It is a rivalry in its purest sense. And for me, that is exciting. And I like that. So if the Cubs ever do make it to the World Series, my reality will have shifted across the board, and I will not understand the rules of physics the way that they currently exist, but I will be happy for my friends, and I will ultimately, you know, not to be all dorky Cardinal fan about it, but there's a hat tip moment to that kind of idea. You just hope it doesn't come to that. but I'm curious, like, whereas I feel like, you know, I don't know if that's that unusual in a right. It feels to me almost like a college football rivalry. Maybe this is being in the South that has made me realize this, but like, you know, like Georgia and Florida, I think is actually a reasonable analogy to it. The idea that like, you know, you want them to lose, but you don't, like, you have tons of friends that are Florida fans.
Right.
And right. So, you know, and I guess that brings us back to this ultimate idea of, you know, what it means. And I'm curious, this is my last question for you. Getting back to the Mets, if the Mets don't do it this year, it does. You've made a convincing case that next year might not be easier. Like, this might be a one-shot deal, but certainly the type of opportunity and the things falling the way they have for the Mets have been good fortune, and good fortune is often not repeated, particularly when it comes to the Mets.
Right.
Do you think that the average Mets fan, or the Mets fan base as you currently understand it, and even you personally, do you feel like it will be particularly difficult if they don't make it out of, say, the NLDS, if they lose to the Dodgers, who I mean, to me, I just sort of comment about this today, arguably should be the favorite in the National League when you look at how these things work. Do you think this is going to feel like an LOL Mets, here they go getting our hopes up and breaking us down, if they don't win that series?
I don't think you can answer that question now. I think you can answer that question in 1 or 2 years, because if this is followed by the Mets refusing or unable or both to invest in the team on the other side of it, keep players around, add to that core, and make themselves into contenders in 2016 and beyond, it's going to be a real problem for this fan base. And you're going to see, you know what it's almost like? You can compare this to either 69 or 73. And if it is 69, then they're going to have this World Series victory. The team will be remembered forever. The team will be memorialized in Dennis Quaid movies. And it's going to be this enormous touch point in franchise history. But you know, with 73, everything fell right too. I mean, they won actually with a worse record significantly than any other division winner has ever, you know, in league history. They were 82-79. They made a playoff run, but the fact of the matter was they didn't keep that team together. Management was not ready to do so. And by the late 1970s, Shea Stadium was empty. And it was just this nice little, well, we remember, you gotta believe. I mean, and you know, that's been taken by the franchise as this sense going forward. It's all about amazing and magic, and this idea that a New York franchise somehow should rely on supernatural forces rather than like sheer force of quality management and superior finances in order to win is sort of mind-boggling in a salary cap free league. But that's what this could end up being. I don't think you're going to see fans that way now. I think you're going to see fans immediately, and there'll be greater pressure if you lose in the NLDS to say, all right, now it's time to build on it. And if they're not prepared to build on it, there's going to be a massive blowback similar to what you would have seen if they hadn't made those moves in July and we hadn't seen this sort of stay of execution over the last couple of months.
Okay, I do have one more question. That's a very brief and kind of an emotional one. One of the things that's been really enjoyable over the last couple of years of playoffs, you saw this in Kansas City last year, you saw in Pittsburgh 2 years ago, these teams that have been denied something for a long time finally be able to kind of explode on a national stage. Particularly, we have not seen a postseason game at Citi Field. And I love Citi Field. Like I like it as a, I prefer it to Yankee Stadium. It you know, the ads are a little ugly, and right. But generally speaking, as a ballpark experience, I find it a positive one, and it feels like a place that will hold sound. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious what you think that first if they get home field, and that first game would be Friday, a week from Friday.
That's right.
And you saw how Pittsburgh was. Do you anticipate that sort of outpouring of emotion on that first night, or will people hold back a little?
No, there will be. It will be.
There will be no self-protection.
Mets fans have been looking for a reason to do this for such a long time, right. And there are a couple of points of reference from this year. The Matt Harvey first start of the year back in April, Citi Field sounded like Shea. I was also there that weekend that they swept the Nationals right after Cespedes came to town. It's the same thing. There's not a holding back. Mets fans as a group are looking to embrace at every turn, looking to believe at every turn, which, by the way, is why I think there's so much bitterness when things go exactly opposite of what you would have hoped. And so, no, Mets fans do not protect themselves. If Mets fans wanted to protect themselves emotionally, they wouldn't be Mets fans in right. this place.
All right. Well, Howard, I look forward to seeing you at a New York-related World Series event this year. I'm not quite ready to say that I want it to be at Citi Field, though.
Yes, which is a reasonable perspective for you. And I, in fact, have taken a page out of your playbook. I intend to bring my wife and my father to at least a couple of postseason games to be able to combine the work with play get to experience it as fully in the Will Leach mode, which Mets fans don't get to do as often as Cardinals fans do. You guys get to do it every year.
Listen, you know, no one suffers as much as Cardinal fans. You said it, and I couldn't agree with you more. All right, thanks, Howard. It's a pleasure. I look forward to seeing this postseason. And listen, when the book comes out, I'm going to look forward to talking to you in depth about that as well.
Fantastic. Well, that sounds great.
All right. Thank you to Howard Rangel. Please follow him on Twitter at Howard at Howard Rangel, HOARDMEGDAL. This is the Will Experience Podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We will be back on Monday, probably, with Allison Futter in our full-on postseason preview. Be safe out there. Have a wonderful week. Enjoy the last week of the baseball season. It's going to be great. Take care.